All right, I'm gonna go ahead and get started. Thank you all for joining me. My name is Mark Gray. I'm a program manager on the PowerShell team. I've been on the team pretty much since the inception of DSC. So if you like DSC or hate DSC, you can yell at me. I have a couple of guest speakers here with me to show some cool stuff in addition to what I'm showing you at the end of the deck here. So stick around and see not only the cool stuff that I show you, but some stuff that some third parties are doing with DSC. So how many of you have or do you use PowerShell? Everybody almost, all right. How many of you use DSC? Only about 10% of those. All right, so how many of you actually have seen any other DSC presentations? All right, good. So I'll be able to show you some new stuff. I'm talking about some similar things, but I've taken a little bit of a different spin on it. So I'm showing you, I'll talk about desired state configuration and how it fits in the DevOps and continuous deployment world. Doesn't mean that DSC can only be used in DevOps or with DevOps and continuous deployment. It's just a really good showcase of DSC, and it allows them to really move quickly with it. So I'll start by talking about what I mean by DevOps and continuous deployment after this slide. So desired state configuration. So what customers really want is the ability to have an idea, get feedback from customers, generate requirements, send those requirements to development, have development go through the process of developing and testing that stuff, and turn it into code, and then push that out to operations and have that out to the customers. And they want to do that as quickly as possible. And the reason they want to do that as quickly as possible, the quicker you get features out, the faster you get customers, or the more satisfied your customers are, or you get ahead of your competition, or what have you. So the whole idea is to have that idea or get feedback from your customers or whatever and drive that through the process till it's out to the customers so that you can make more money. So the typical agile process is, or agile, I have in quotes, is you have a feature that you're working on, you design that feature, you develop the code for that feature, you do some testing on that feature, and you check that feature in, and then you work on the next feature and the next feature and the next feature. And then you go and fix a bunch of bugs. So you go through the same process. You design the fix for the bug. You code the bug. You test the bug. You have all this glom of fixes and code changes and things like that in the development world, and you push that out to operations. Operations takes that big chunk of stuff, adds on some configuration. And a lot of times, that configuration is not a PowerShell script. It can be a PowerShell script. But a lot of times it's just a list. This is what I have to do with this. I have this, and I need to do this stuff so when I push it to production, it's going to work. They take all of that stuff, they push it to production, and hope and pray that it works. They make sure that if they're doing it by hand, they didn't make any errors with the configuration as they deployed it. In a continuous or a DevOps and continuous deployment world, it works a little bit differently. The first thing that you notice is the config and code happen early on. So one of the core concepts with DSC and all of the other languages out there like Puppet and Chef and things like that is you want to have the configuration happen early on in the process. So you develop your configuration along with your code. It goes through the process and testing and things like that in the development world. And then when it gets out to the production world, you're confident that your code that you're deploying is going to work in the environment that you're deploying it to. So in this case, it goes through that process, test, check in, so you're not doing the config late, you're doing it early on. You have that feature, and from a continuous deployment perspective, you don't get that big clump of stuff. You develop a feature, you do the configuration for that, you run the tests, you run the check in, and deploy it to the production world. You get those features out there quickly for your customers, and you can get feedback from them and make iterations much more quickly. And you can do that with bugs as well. So you go through that same process. And the other thing that you get with that is more stability. So you're putting small changes out into the world. And with small changes, you don't have to worry about as big of problems, essentially. So underlying all that, to be able to do that, if you had to manually go through and configure the system, That would not work, so you can't do that. You have to have automation so you can actually get that through the process and be able to release on a daily basis, hourly basis, what have you. So some of the benefits of this DevOps and continuous deployment. Who knows what that is? Anybody? It's a Bugatti Veyron. What is that known for? It's the fastest production car made. And to be able to be continuous deployment and things like that, you got to be quick. You got to be quick in a number of different ways. So you got to be able to get something through the pipeline quickly, and you got to be able to react to feedback and things like that quickly. So the Veyron is a good model of that. You also need to be agile. So who knows what sport that is? Nobody? One person. My kids actually play lacrosse. It's a fantastic sport. It's a good combination between soccer and hockey and all those kinds of things, but it's a fun sport. But one of the things with that is it's not, you don't have a plan. It's just like soccer. You don't have a plan. If you have a plan to, I'm going to run down the field and do this, it's not going to work. You have to react to what someone else is doing to you and make it work that way. So the same thing with continuous deployment. You have to react to your customers. You have to react to what's happening with the builds and all that kind of stuff. So you have to be agile in a continuous deployment and a system. And the other thing is stability. So basically, as a gymnast, I don't know, I've always been fascinated by them. My kids don't do it or anything like that. But when they get up there and they're on the rings doing the Iron Cross and things like that, they're rock solid in there. And with continuous deployment, you need to have a system that when you deploy it, you know that it's going to work, and then you can go back and work on the next feature. If I'm pushing out a feature and I push out that feature and it just blows up my entire system and I have to react to that and deal with that, that's going to be a problem. You want to be able to have a system where you push something through the pipeline, and when it gets out to production, you know that it's going to work in production. All right, so how does DSC help with this? DSC gives you the ability to, or in order to be quick and agile and all that kind of stuff, you have to have a configuration system that keeps things simple. So desired state configuration gives you the ability to declaratively say what you want the end state of the system to look like. PowerShell, you have a way of automating, but a lot of times it's not as simple to look at and know what's going to happen by looking at the configuration. With DSC, it's very easy to look at and say, I know exactly what this thing's going to do. When I look at it next week, when I look at it a year from now, when someone else looks at it, they know what that configuration is going to do. We also have a concept of configuration data, which allows you to separate out, and I'll talk more about that later, but it allows you to separate out what the system looks like from the environment. So when in continuous deployment, you have a dev environment, a test environment, and a production environment. If you have a different configuration in each one of those things, you're not as confident that when it goes to production, it's going to work because I have a different configuration. A lot of times in those environments, it's the configuration itself shouldn't be different. It's just the environment. So the typical case is I have a web app that I'm going to deploy. That web app has IIS on the front end, it has SQL on the back end. And when I'm in my production environment, those two things are on one box. When I go to the test environment, I have IIS on one box, I have a SQL server on another box. And then when I go to production, I have five IIS servers and three SQL servers. So things like that change when you go from environment to environment. But the configuration for each of those things shouldn't change, essentially. And this configuration data allows you to actually manage that. Velocity, DSC allows you to go quickly. We have a concept of resources. We have a couple of different types of resources, but it allows you to reuse code in a very predictable way. So you can reuse what you've done. You can reuse what other people on your team have done. You can reuse what people in the community have done. It gives you that ability to take things that other people are expert in. So someone's a SQL expert, they develop something, I can use that and use it in a very simple way and get up and running and get my configuration going very quickly. The other thing is from a DSC perspective, or from a PowerShell perspective, we are releasing on a much quicker cadence. So we have the concept of WMF, I'm sure most of you are aware of the WMF. We're releasing that in a preview format on almost a monthly basis, so you get all of the new stuff that we're working on, and you can give us feedback, and we can make changes to that, and we can get it back out there. So we're allowing you to be work quicker, and we're actually working quicker as well to keep up with you. So, and the last thing is flexibility. So, a lot of configuration systems give you a single way of doing things. With DSC, you have a number of different ways of doing things from depending on how your environment works. You can push a configuration to target nodes. They can pull the configuration. If you're in Azure, we have another way of getting the configuration to the system. And then there are a number of different engine settings that allow you to do things like, I want this thing to run every 15 minutes. I want it to run every half hour. I want just a whole bunch of different things. I don't want it to run in the background at all. I just want to know if my configuration is out of sync. So I push this configuration out, and something changed in the back end. I want to know about that, but I don't want it to be fixed. So we give you the flexibility to actually have DSC run the way that your system works, essentially. All right. So I'm going to do a demo here, and I'm going to switch it around a little bit. If you've seen other DSC presentations, I'm going to kind of show you the end state of the system. So in my environment, I'm a someone in a corporation, or I'm someone who's developing a WordPress theme. I have two environments, a test environment and a production environment. In the test environment, there's a blank VM that I have stood up already. I could actually, with DSC, stand a VM up as well in Hyper-V or Azure or what have you. But in this particular case, I have a VM running, and I'm going to push a configuration down to that. In the production environment, I have a system that's already out there. So I have WordPress and SQL out there, and I'm going to configure that or update that with a theme. So I have the prerequisites, I have PHP code, I have accounts and all that kind of stuff already out there, and I'm going to update that with my configuration. So the big thing that you'll notice here is I have a green, or it happens to be green, that was by mistake, but I have a green field environment in my test environment. So I've got a blank slate. And in production, 99% of the time, I would guess, you don't have a clean slate to work with. You're deploying to a brownfield environment that has configuration already there. You may have done it with DSC. You may have done it with other systems. You may have done it by hand. It doesn't really matter. You have a system that's out there, and you need to configure that. And you want to go move to DSC, we give you a way of doing that, too. And I'm going to, in my demo, I'm going to use a single configuration. And that same configuration is going to be used in both environments. So you'll see that configuration will stand up in the whole WordPress environment on a blank VM, and then I'll use that same VM or the same configuration to configure the other environment. So this takes into account the configuration data that I mentioned earlier. So I have some environmental data that I'll pass into the configuration, and that'll configure my test environment. And then I will run some tests on it and stuff like that. I won't actually do that, but in the real world, you would run some tests to make sure it worked. And then you would use that same configuration, pass in the production data to that configuration, and that'll go out and configure the real-world environment. In this particular case, the only thing that'll change is the theme. So I'll be going from an old theme to a new theme. But it will also check all of these other things. So it'll check the PHP code, it'll check the accounts, it'll check the plugins to make sure that they're in the state that I want them to be in. And if they're not, it'll put them in that state. Does that make sense? All right, so essentially I'm deploying WordPress. And how many people have seen demos where they deploy WordPress? Lots of people. Yeah, and where does the demo usually end? With WordPress set up, where you go into the site and you do a configuration of WordPress by hand. In this demo, I'm not putting it to that state. I'm actually going to have a fully functional WordPress site when it's done. So the theme is going to be configured, the plugins are going to be installed and configured, and all that kind of stuff. So it's a full working site with DSC. And if any of you have seen demos that we've done in the past, we have the Cupcake website. That is actually the content that I have in WordPress. So I've taken that content, and it's going to be running on a WordPress site. All right, so let's jump into the demo here. All right, so over here, what I'll do is I'll just kick off the demo. This takes a few minutes. All I'm doing is running a PowerShell script here. I'll kick that off with an enter, and it'll go out, and it'll start running DSC. And I will stop this at some point and jump over here to the configuration and show you what I have going here. So that is actually doing the configuration on my test environment. I have a VM there. It's going to push the configuration down and do that configuration. So this is the configuration that I have. A couple things to point out here. A lot of you had not seen DSC before. So what DSC, it doesn't look much like PowerShell at all. It's declarative, so it gives you the ability to say, I want this to look this way. And it, you just have values or properties and values. So properties and values, and it's very simple to look at and know what it's doing. So I'll get to this all nodes thing. But basically, everything inside of the configuration node, we've added a configuration node. And everything inside of that is desired state configuration. The other really powerful thing about desired state configuration is it is declarative, but it is also PowerShell language. So you have the declarative syntax, but you can also do imperative PowerShell. So you can do things like if statements and stuff like that in there if you have to. I have actually done it in here down at the bottom. So if you come down to the bottom of my configuration, I have some test data that I only want to be on the test environment. I don't want it to be on the production environment because I have real data on the production environment. But to do my tests and things like that, I need some data in there so I can make sure that my theme works and all that kind of stuff. So I have an if statement in here that basically says, if this thing is met, I need to take this test data and I need to dump it to the database. So you're allowed to do that kind of stuff in there as well. So basically, the configuration just is a number of resources. So all of these things that you see underneath the node, well, let me step back up one. If you look at the next statement under configuration, it's a node. And that node is just basically a way of saying that for this specific system, this is the configuration I want. And that can be dynamic. So you can call out to any PowerShell commandlet and say, I'm going to talk to Active Directory and get all of my X servers and get the names of those things back and use those in my configuration. So you can do whatever you want there, and I'll talk about what this is doing. But you basically get an array, a single or an array of server names, and then DSC will use those to do the configuration. And then everything under that are resources. And resources are, I'll dig into those a bit more in a bit, but resources are the smart stuff that know how to do the configurations. So this is kind of what a resource looks like. You have the resource, you give it a name, and then you have a bunch of properties, and then the values for those properties under there. So very simple, very easy to look at. In this case, I have 10 or so different resources that I'm using. We have three different types of resources that I'll talk about in a bit as well. So let's see where the configuration is here. So that's my configuration that I'm using. Then I have a script for my demo environment that's calling that configuration. I'll dig into that. And then I have one for my Azure environment as well. And these two PSD1 files over here are the environmental data that I'm actually passing in. So those are the things that change from environment to environment. And I'll talk about the meta configuration later as well. So if I jump back over here, a couple things that you'll notice here is we give a lot of verbose information if you want it. So when you're pushing your configuration, you have a way of saying, I want to know what's happening. And you can see on this, you can see exactly what's going on with the configuration. You can see the resource name that's running. You can see some verbose information about what's happening. All of that information gets sent back to the console if you run it in the way that I did here with a push mode. But it also gets logged in the event log as well. So you can see back what happened with your configuration, if there are any issues or anything like that. So, and one of the things that I didn't actually catch it, and let me scroll up here a little bit. Wrong mouse. If I scroll up here a little bit, you can see that one of the concepts that we have with resources is we have a test, a set, and a get. So all resources have to have those three methods, essentially. And when we run the test first. And if the test returns true, we know that the system is in that state, so we don't bother to run set. So it can speed up your configuration, and you can run it over and over again and make sure that the system is in the same state. And you can see here that it's very clear what's happening. So they start a set on the resource, and then they start the test, and you can see right through there what's going on. So if I let that thing go, still working. So it's going through and doing the last little bit here. So it's actually putting the, actually it's deploying and configuring PHP right now. So if I jump back over here real quick, Excuse me. So in this configuration, the script itself that I'm calling, all I'm doing here is actually importing a configuration and then calling that configuration. So the, from a DSC perspective, you have the configuration that I node that I showed you earlier is like a function. So you define that function, and then you have to call that function. And I'm defining that function, or I'm referencing that function from the module file, and then I'm calling it down here to actually process and generate a MOF file that will then send to the target node and actually get it get it processed, essentially. So I'm doing that with both the meta configuration and the configuration itself. Second. All right, still going. So this takes about 4 minutes. Hopefully it's finishing up. Next themes. So it's doing the themes right now. Where are we? All right, so what else is in here? We have the WordPress configuration. Talked about the configuration, the node statement. So you can have, one of the things with a node statement is you can have multiple node statements in a configuration. So in this particular case, I have a single node statement. But if I had that example where I have a front end and back end, so I have an IIS and I have a SQL, you can have multiple node statements in there to allow you to actually configure MySQL and configure IIS on different nodes. So you can separate that out that way as well. So you can have multiple nodes inside of a configuration. So the PSDD1 file is simply a hash table that has properties and values in it. And in this particular case, the only thing that's needed in here is the node name property. And that just says the name of the node that's going to be used to be configured. Everything else under here is something that I wanted. It's properties that I wanted to use in my configuration and that I want to have changed in my configuration. So you get to define those and then reference those in the configuration itself. And same exact properties in my Azure environment file that I can use in the same configuration. All right. So where are we? So looks like it finished. Took longer than it has been in the past, but it's done now. It's done the configuration. And if I actually go back here, I should have showed you this before, but if I tried to connect to my www.contoso.com, it gave me an error because the system was just a blank VM. If I come back and refresh this now, actually I'll just go to www. You'll see WordPress stood up. It's got my theme that I want on there. It's got some menus. It's got some test images here. This is a slider plugin that it's got enabled. Down here, it's got some products. So I have an e-commerce theme, or not theme, but plugin enabled on there as well with some images there. So I can come in to my blog, and in my blog, I have a bunch of test data in there. So in the test data, you can see that I can make sure that my theme works with a bunch of test data. It has a bunch of comments. Things like that. So I can do my testing on this with my test data to make sure that things work and then not have that data go to my production environment. So you have the products page and support and things like that. So if I come over to my Azure environment, so this is deployed right now. This is my Azure website that I have up there in production. It's got a different theme to it. It doesn't have the slider in it. It's got the same products, but it's got different images, so it's got real products in the real database. If I come to my blog, in my blog, I have, because I'm a new company, I just have a single blog, and wow, this internet connection is slow. So I have a single blog there that has a real blog saying welcome to my bakery company and things like that. So this is different data than what's on the test environment. So if I come back to my PowerShell, I can run the configuration here that's going to configure, use that same configuration and deploy it to my Azure environment. So there's a bunch of stuff that I will get into a little bit later that happens behind the scenes here. But this is actually using an Azure resource plugin. So it's actually taking everything that it needs, pushing it up to an Azure blob storage, and then getting it pulled down to the Azure VM itself, and then configuring that there. So, and like I mentioned before, I happen to have configured this VM using DSC before, but it doesn't matter if I did or not. I could have manually set up WordPress on that target node and then use DSE to configure it from there. So this only takes about a minute because it's only updating the configuration that's up there. So it's checking to see if things are in the desired state. If they are in the desired state, it just skips right over them and goes on from there. The logging in this particular case in Azure gets written just the way that it works from the Azure extension perspective, gets written up on the Azure server that you're deploying to as well. So this should just take about a minute. So, and again, if you come over to my configuration here, I have a separate script that I'm calling, but it is using the same configuration. So if I come here, it's using the WordPress configuration.ps1, which is the same configuration that I was using before, and that's the name of the configuration. So you come back to my configuration, that's the name that I'm using. So it's using the exact same configuration to deploy to Azure. So let's see where we are here. It looks like the configuration is deployed successfully to Azure. It usually takes a second or two to finish up, but if I come back to my production site here and go home, you should see that it's been updated. It's got the new template with the menus over on the right. It's got my slider configured here. It's got my products and all that kind of stuff. Oop, no, that's the wrong one, sorry. If I go home here, you'll see that it's got the slider, it's got my real data in there. So it hasn't put my test data up there. It's got the real blog post, it's got my slider enabled and all that kind of stuff. So it's got that real blog post there. So hope you guys saw there that you can use that same configuration in test into production and really get the power of DSE. All right. So if I jump back to my deck here, all right. So let's dig into the three different things that I talk about: the simplicity, velocity, and flexibility of DSE. We'll start with the simplicity. As you can see, a typical script, I'm sure you guys have seen many of these. All of you said you work with PowerShell. A lot of the stuff that you see in here, looking at this script very quickly, you can't tell exactly what it's going to do. If you have that same thing in a DSE format in the declarative syntax, you get rid of all of that if logic, you get rid of all of the try, catch, and all that kind of stuff, and you can see very quickly what this thing is doing. It's installing a feature, and it's starting a service. Or is it starting or stopping? It's making sure the service is starting. So you're saying, this is how I want the system to look, not, or this is what I want the system to look like, not this is how I want you to get the system in that state. All right, so this is how we do that. The typical scripts have intent, they have dependency resolution, they have error handling, they have reboot resiliency, they have a whole bunch of stuff all in one file. You can separate that out, but there's nothing forcing you to do that in a script. In DSE, we break that out into configuration. So you have the intent, which is that file that I just showed you. That's, this is the way I want the system to look. And then you have the smart resources that are imperative logic that are written by a domain expert. So I'm a SQL administrator. I know SQL. I've used the commandlets a billion times. I can write a module that will allow you to configure a database in SQL, and then someone else that doesn't have that domain knowledge can take that thing and use it to combine it with IIS or all of these other things and be able to deploy something very rich and powerful without having that underlying knowledge. So the resources are that underlying, this is how you get something in that state. And then the engine itself does all of the dependency resolution, it does the error handling, it does the reboot resiliency and all of that kind of stuff. So that is in the engine, so you don't, there's no need to have that in the resource, in the configuration itself. So it abstracts all that stuff away and handles that for you. It logs, it handles the errors and stuff like that. So we have a template that the resources have to comply with. So we force good behavior, essentially. You could technically do this with, you could do this with PowerShell modules, because resources are just PowerShell modules. But in the DSE system, we force that, so you have to comply with that system. So What you have in the configuration itself is the intent, and then in the engine and in the resources, you have kind of a make it so how you're going to get to that state. In the make it so, it's the resources, it's the engine, and all that kind of stuff. The intent, as I mentioned before, we break it out into a structural configuration and an environmental configuration. The structural configuration is this is the state I want the system to be in. It's abstracting out that environmental information. So when you go from test to production, you know that when I go to production, I'm using the same configuration so I can be confident that it's going to work in production. All right, so next I'll jump into another quick demo here. Over here, I already talked about the, so if you look at the Azure configuration, I'm sorry, the demo configuration here, I'm passing in, when I call the configuration itself, I'm passing in the configuration data for that. So that is actually the environmental data that I'm passing in. And what that does, when you get into the configuration, it allows you to access that using the all nodes. That is like if you have used PowerShell, it's like the dollar underbar. It says everything that is coming into this if statement or whatever, I'm going to loop through that for this node statement. So it's actually going to act like a for each statement in here. So it allows you to take that and do logic on it. So you can say where, and in my particular case, where the role contains WordPress. Again, that is information in that PSD1 file. I defined all those properties and values. So role is one of those ones that I define that I know that I want to use in my configuration, and I can take that and reason on that in the configuration here. So it says, give me all the nodes that have a role of WordPress. So if you have some that are WordPress, some that are MySQL, you can separate those out and do different things in the configuration. Then you can use that, and inside the resources themselves, once you loop through here, you can use the dollar node and use the properties on those themselves to get the data and actually the values of those properties. So you can pull through all of those. The composite resources. So I've talked about composite resources I've talked about different resources. So this XMySQL is a composite resource. We have, I guess, three different kinds of resources. We have inbox resources that if you, I don't know if I have any at the top level here, the archive here is an inbox resource. So in WMF and in Windows Server, we shipped a set of resources. I think there are about 12 of them. Those are inbox resources. We built those. They're scripts. You can use them in your configurations. But we also allow you to use resources built from the community. So we've built a bunch of resources that you can get from the PowerShell blog or the PowerShell gallery. Those are start with an X, and that's a custom resource, essentially. So you have to import that. So in the top of this statement here, you'll see a region where I have import. So if it's not a built-in resource, you have to say, import that resource so that I can use it. And you have those import statements here. And then you can use those things there. And then there's a composite resource. A composite resource is just another configuration, essentially, that you're treating like a resource. And a couple of these happen to be composite resources. So if I come all the way down here, come up to the top here, I have some helper configurations. So up here, I have two configurations. So a configuration enable WordPress. In there, I have a for loop, and then I have a custom resource that I'm using to do the configuration of a WordPress plugin. So this is called inside of this configuration, just like any other resource. So the enable WordPress plugins is calling that thing. So that's a composite resource. And you have two different places where you can have composite resources. Like you saw here, I have it in the same configuration. So if I have a composite resource, like this particular case, that's kind of unique to me, and I'm going to use it in this configuration, but other people are not going to use it, then you can put it in your configuration and use it that way. If you have a composite resource like some of these other ones, where other people are going to need to be able to use it, like this one up here, the provision SQL, if other people need to use it, you can set that up and put it in a directory on the system and share it with other people so they can use it just like any other resource, essentially. All right, and then there is a... All right, so those are the resources that are used in DSC. I'll jump back here real quick. All right, so let's talk about velocity. So I've mentioned this once or twice. We want you to reuse, reuse, reuse. If you don't have to write a bunch of code and you can reuse what others have done or what Microsoft has done, that will allow you to work much faster. So there's a composite resource that I just talked about. If you reuse those, we have the X ones that are up on the gallery that you can reuse. It also, the way that DSC works with the configuration, it allows you to be work the way that you want to work, essentially. So if you have a configuration, you can have a configuration for a specific node, or you can have a configuration for a role. So I have a configuration for IIS, and then I can feed information into it and have it dump out a file that is unique for a specific server, essentially. And we have a gallery of resources. We're releasing resources on the web, but we also have a gallery where you can get not only DSC resources, but PowerShell modules. So we give you, if any of you went to Jeffrey's session, he has the find module commandlet. It gives you a way of going to a central location and finding modules. You can also publish modules up there and things like that as well. So this is actually the composite configuration itself. So like I showed you before, a composite configuration is just a configuration that acts as a resource. So you use that, you have a property value combination that you're using there. So it gives you a way of actually using configurations like resources. All right, so we publish the DSC resource kit on a regular basis. We do it about every month. I think it's been pretty stable that way. And that's just a bunch of resources that the Microsoft team itself is creating and putting out there, so you can actually reuse those yourselves. PowerShell Get is the way to find those resources on the gallery and use those. It also will give you the ability to actually publish them as well. So if you have a resource that you create, you can publish it up on the web as well. So wave zero of our resources, we have these 12 resources. These are the ones that I mentioned are in the box. Since then, we have released 7 other waves of resources. We have everything from configuration to MySQL to websites to application pools to any number of different things, to Azure. We've just released some, or I guess we haven't released them yet, but we have some that are queued up for Exchange, so you can manage Exchange. We'll have some soon for SQL. I'm sorry, not SQL, for SharePoint. So there's a DSC configuration that allows you to put in a few different parameters and deploy a SharePoint farm. It's actually, has anyone used the SharePoint farm on Azure? Like 3 different parameters that you put in on Azure to actually deploy a SharePoint farm? That actually runs on top of a DSC configuration. So there's a DSC configuration that allows you to do that configuration. So it's extremely powerful and allows you to really abstract away a lot of the details of how things are done, essentially. And these waves will keep coming. We have them going out on a regular basis. If you go to the PowerShell blog, we have directions, or we have links to that. So every time we release a wave, it's up there. Right now, I think we put them up as packages on the Script Center. But going forward, they're actually going to be on the gallery. We're actually doing them in both places right now. So they're downloadable, and you can get them from the gallery itself. So going forward, we'll have references to them on the PowerShell blog, but you'll download them from the gallery itself using that PowerShell Get. All right, like I mentioned before, you guys are not, we're not only allowing you to move faster. We know that for you to move faster, we have to move faster. So we're releasing WMF previews on a practically monthly basis. So all the work that we're doing in PowerShell in WMI and DSC, we're making available to you guys on a regular basis. It's everything that we've done. Basically, when we're done doing the work, we release it just like a continuous deployment world. We want your feedback, so use it, give us feedback so that we can react to it and make those fixes in the environment and get it out there. The WMF5 is available on Server 2012 R2, I think, so it's available for the latest. The stable build, the WMF4, is available down level. We're doing the resource kit on a regular basis as well, so we're releasing that monthly. So go out and get that and use that. And one of the other things with the resource kit is, because these things are PowerShell modules, we encourage you to make changes to them. We release them as X resources, so it's X whatever the names are. You guys can take those things, it's just PowerShell resource, or I'm sorry, it's just a PowerShell module. You can take it, change it for what you need, and if it's something that makes it better that you want to share with other people, change that X to a C, publish it back to the gallery, and other people can make use of it as well. So it's that reuse, reuse, reuse thing. So take the stuff that we're putting out there, use it, change it, share it with other people. All right, so flexibility. So a couple things that I want to show you with flexibility, and I am running hot on time here, so I will try to be pretty quick. So meta configuration, I abstracted a couple things away from you in those configurations. So the resources that we have, I mentioned we have composite resources and custom resources. Those resources are not on the box by default. So that blank VM that I deployed out there did not have those resources on it. So I needed a way to get those things to that box. And what I did was we've added in WMF5 a way of I can push the configuration down to that node, but have it actually pull it back. Actually, let me jump back to the slides here real quick. So I'll go through that because we're short on time. So the push model that I mentioned before it's pretty straightforward. Use PowerShell, you generate that moth that I talked about. It's stored on the local file system. I use commandlets, the start DSC configuration, to actually push that out to the target node. You can push it to one node, you can push it to multiple nodes. That node receives that configuration and it enacts that configuration, but before it does that, it actually parses the whole configuration and says, are there any resources in here that I don't understand? If there are any resources in there that it doesn't understand, it gives you the ability to actually go out to a central location and pull those things down. So you can tell the system, if you don't have any resources, go here and get them. So it gives you the ability to do that. We also have a pull model. And in the pull model, it's pretty much the same, except you generate that mock document, you put it up on a central location, then you tell the client nodes, go there and get that configuration. And then it goes through the same process. It gets that MOF document, pulls it down, parses it, sees if there are any resources it doesn't have. If it doesn't have any, it goes back up to the pull server and comes down and actually installs those things and then processes that configuration. In Azure, you can actually deploy using the same method. So you can actually push that up, set up a pull server, go get the configuration from there. You can use those same techniques. But because Azure has an extension model, you can actually use Azure specific way of deploying those things. So we give you the ability to actually publish all of the resources and configuration up to the Azure VM. So basically there's a publish Azure VM configuration. You run that on the target node, point it at a configuration. It looks through the configuration and does the same thing that the end node would do. It says, are there any resources in here that are being imported? If there are, I'm going to package those things up along with the configuration. I'm going to dump that up to an Azure blob. And then when the VM comes up or when the VM needs to be updated, it pulls all that stuff down and enacts it. And the set Azure VM DSC extension basically says, use this configuration that's up on the Azure blob to actually configure yourself. And you can do that on a new VM, or you can do it on an updated VM, so you can actually update a VM with that same information. All right, now we do the demo. All right, so the way that you tell the system to actually go somewhere and get the resources is using the, what we call the meta configuration. And the meta configuration is simply the settings for the DSC engine on the target node. So that this is what that looks like. And if any of you have used DSC, we have changed it a little bit in WMF5. So previously, you had one configuration, and that configuration had meta configuration and regular configuration in it. We've separated that out in WMF5. So you have a configuration, and you can see up at the top here, there's an attribute. And that attribute says that this is a meta configuration, essentially. It says, and highlighting that doesn't help you, but up here, it says this configuration is a meta configuration. So that way, when you come in here and start typing, so if you use the PowerShell IntelliSense and do a control space, you only see resources and properties that you can configure in a meta configuration itself. So settings is also new in the meta configuration. We called it before it was local configuration manager or something like that, but in this particular case, all of those settings that were in that are now in a settings resource, if you will. So a few of the things here real quickly that you will notice. Reboot node if needed. You can tell the node that if a configuration needs to reboot, if I install something that needs a reboot, DSC can handle that. But you can also tell it not to, and that's the default. So we know that deploying to production, a lot of times, you're not going to want DSC to reboot the system. You're going to want to deal with that, go reboot at 3 a.m. or something like that when the system's not being used. We allow you to do that. But if you want to get the configuration to complete, you can handle a reboot itself. So what DSC does when it does a reboot, it runs a configuration to a point where it needs a reboot. It reboots and then continues on from there, essentially, and allows you to actually finish the whole configuration. The last thing you'll see here is the configuration repository web. So that basically says, go there and get configurations or get resources or what have you. So that's the place where I want you to go to get my resources. And to deploy that, you can see over here, you use this set DSC local configuration, point it to that thing, it'll go configure that system. And then the system will know where to go get that and be all configured. And over here in Azure, you can see that things are a little bit different. So like I mentioned, you can use that same technique of pushing or pulling in Azure. But because there's an Azure extension, we give you the ability to actually make use of that. And right here, you can see the published Azure DSC configuration. That does that packaging up of the resources and the configuration, puts it up to the blob, and you specify the Azure subscription and all that stuff there. And then what this does is just puts it to the default blob. And then you run, you associate the configuration with a specific VM, and then it knows where to get that configuration when it starts it up, essentially. In this case, I'm saying update, so I'm saying go update your configuration now. And I can show you here real quickly, up on Azure, I'm up in a container, so I'm up on a storage blob, and up there I have the WordPress.psm1.zip. That is what gets generated by that publish DSC extension, so it dumps that thing up there, and what that looks like is this right here. So this is that zip that I copied back down to the local system. So that has all of the resources that are needed in the configuration, plus the configuration itself, dumped up to that Azure blob up there. Making sense so far? All right. That was that, and I will jump back here. All right. So I mentioned the push-pull. We give you the ability. We know that in typical environments, you may not have access to push configurations to a target node, so we give you the ability to pull it and things like that. We give you the ability to apply, we give you different modes to apply DSC. We give the ability to apply a configuration and just be done with it. We give you the ability to apply and report. So I want to apply a configuration and then tell me if something is different on that configuration, but don't try to reapply that configuration. And then we have the auto correct. So I want to push this configuration up there. And if anything changes in that, I want you to put it back to the way that I said it should be. So we give you the ability to do that by configuring that. And then I already talked about the pull resources. A few of the other things that we've talked mostly about configurations. A few of the other things that we've added in WMF5 are test before you apply. So some feedback that we got almost immediately was deploying a configuration. I want to be able to see what that configuration is going to do before I deploy it. So in WMF5, we give you the ability to say, I have a configuration. Tell me what this thing is going to do. What is in the desired state? What is not in the desired state? What will need to be changed and stuff like that? So instead of using the start DSC, we have a compare DSC, which the name will change when it goes out. But we give you that ability to try that out, see what will happen to the system before you actually enact that configuration. We give you the ability to get the state, the current state of the system. So I define this configuration, and I want to see what the actual state is of the system compared to what my configuration is, essentially. We give you the ability to reapply. So I have a configuration down on the target node. I just want to reapply that that configuration right now. I don't want to push a new configuration down there, just to reapply what's already there. And the last one is the update. So I have the configuration or the system set up so it's going to pull configurations down. And I have it so it's going to do it once a day. I don't want to wait. I know that I put a new configuration up on the pull server and I want that system to go get it now. We give you the ability to actually point to that system and say, go get your configuration right now, and it'll go get it right now. All right, so we talked about the simplicity, the velocity, and the flexibility of DSC. One of the other kind of subsets of flexibility is extensibility. So DSC, some underlying themes from DSC are we're standards-based, we use MOF. So PowerShell commandlets and things like that, when you run a configuration, it generates a MOF. But we separate it out in such a way that you don't need to use the PowerShell language to generate the MOF. You can generate the MOF however you want, get it to the target node, and things will just work from there. So we're standards-based to allow you to do things like that. We're a platform, so we're the language, engines, and resource. So we are that platform. We're not necessarily a solution. What we're doing with DSC is wanting to provide the best experience for managing Windows. So we want you to be able to manage those things in a continuous deployment environment. All right, so this is, I'm not going to dig into this, but we have a bunch of different extension points for DSC. All of the blue are places where third parties, where Microsoft, where your organization yourself can actually extend DSC and make it more powerful, make it suit your needs or what have you. All right, so we'll talk about this real quickly because we're running real low on time. Just DSC and Azure are better together. Azure gives you the environment that's scalable, it's dynamic, and things like that. So you can use that in your test environment to spin up a VM, do a test, spin it back down, and things like that. So it gives you that flexibility, and you can use DSC to actually do that configuration. The distinction that we have between Azure and DSC is Azure has ways and means of actually configuring VMs, drives, network, and stuff like that. DSC is actually used to actually configure the node after it's up and running. So we have the two different distinctions there. The thing that kind of ties them together is the DSC Azure extension. So you set up the system, you tell it to use DSC to actually configure itself once it's up, and that's the tie there. And underneath that, you have a bunch of configuration or continuous deployment tools and things like that, like Visual Studio, like Brewmaster, that lie under there and allow you to actually configure the Azure environment through APIs or through CSM or what have you, and actually tell it what to use from a DSC perspective. So you can actually use the standards-based theory or thing that we have with DSC to actually configure those things from third-party tools. All right, and with that, I'd like to introduce Ryan from ScriptLogic to show you about Brewmaster, and then they're taking advantage of our extensibility, essentially.
Great. Can everyone hear me?
Is the mic on? Hi, everyone. Thanks, Mark. My name is Ryan Dunn. I'm from Aditi. I'm here to talk to you today about Brewmaster and how we leverage DSC. Many people here use Azure, so this is right up your alley. What is Brewmaster? Simply put, this is how we deploy applications into the cloud. And you'll notice I said applications and not VMs. With Azure, it's actually pretty simple to take a single VM, throw it up in the cloud, and configure that. When we look at applications, you have many VMs working in concert. Some have different services, some have other services, some have different networking needs, even different OSs. Think about things like SharePoint or SQL Server Always On or your applications. You have Active Directory, you have SQL Server, you have web front ends, you have application servers. All of these things really need to come together and work as a real application. Well, Brewmaster is how we do that. We use a JSON template syntax, which allows us to take a look at all of those disparate VMs and capture them as a template, which we can version control and we can treat as a single application. Now, it's available today. You can get it out at addcloud.com. It's free to sign up. It's a very generous free plan. What I'm going to do is briefly talk about how it works, and then I'm going to show you a very quick demo of the experience. And make sure you stick around. Mark is here from ScriptRock, and he has a fantastic demo as well. All right, first things first, so templates. We really believe in version control. We use Git, so you can have a public or a private repository in Bitbucket or GitHub. This allows you to do version control rather than reinvent the wheel. We said, look, you can do all sorts of merging and branches, dev tests, production, right? We're solving the problem that our customers have today of how do I take an environment from dev to test to production? Or what if I have to rebuild that environment every single day? And I want to tear it down at night, and I need to rebuild it. Or every time I do a QA build, I need to have this environment up and ready. Well, by version controlling all of your settings and your resources and your assets, this allows us to reliably and consistently deploy the same application or set of VMs again and again. So first thing we do is we pull the template. We parse that template for all the parameters that you define as a template author. We do some validation on there, make sure you don't garbage in, garbage out, password complexity, things like that. We validate that, and then we start the deployment. Now, in Azure, we work within a single affinity group, and that affinity group makes sure that you have your compute and storage co-located, for instance, for performance reasons. We'll go ahead, lay down your cloud services, we'll lay down your networking, we'll lay down your VMs, we'll lay down your storage. And at that point, we're going to go ahead and bootstrap your machines. Assuming we can forward here. And each time we bootstrap those machines with DSC, we make sure that it's on the box. We make sure we can reach it and manage that machine. After that, we instruct each one of the machines to actually pull down from your template repository a template package. And we call it a package, which it contains not only your configuration, that JSON template itself, but also any assets that you might have in there. So like custom resources, installers, certificates, things basically that you need to package as part of that deployment will all be in here as well, version controlled. Once we lay that down on disk, we're going to go ahead and dynamically generate the DSC for each one of those nodes. We're going to push it down into the node, kick off that DSC configuration, let it run. And Brewmaster is going to sit back and monitor that configuration. We're going to report the process. We're going to tell you if it fails. We're going to retry. We're going to compensate. And we're going to do the things that you would normally have to do in standby. And we'll let you know what your errors are and monitor all of those different VMs together. Now, how does this look? Well, if you go out to the Brewmaster site, you log in, you see a bunch of templates that we ship out of box. So we have things for like Elasticsearch, Web Farms, Active Directory, TeamCity Build Server, SharePoint, of course. These are very difficult applications to sometimes to put together. What we've done is we've taken these templates, we put them out as examples or ways for you to bootstrap your own environments. Now you can deploy these templates directly as is, or you can actually fork them and create your own version in source control. So in this case, this is what I've done. I've forked our web form template, and I've registered it here on the site. If I take a look at the details, it tells me what the parameters are. If I wanted to delve into the JSON, I could even see it in here, but I'm just going to hit deploy. If First things first, we collect some of your credentials. We need to be able to deploy into your Azure account, right? We also take the what branch do you want or which commit do you want out of Git. And then we dynamically generate this UI. So as a template author, you put in what your input parameters are, some type hints. We'll go ahead and generate a UI for you. And in this case, I'm just going to do this real quick. I'll choose Brewmaster. Let's do a new cloud service, TE BART02. Do some validation there. And give myself some credentials. Right? And then I hit deploy. At this point, I've passed it off to Brewmaster. We're going to take that. We're going to start to build out your resources and track the progress. You can see that starting up here. So we're going to go out and figure out if those deployment groups, those affinity groups, all those things are there, and we're going to start laying down that infrastructure for you. Now, I've talked about the template quite a bit, and you saw kind of briefly the JSON. Let's look at it, what it looks like in real life. So as part of the SDK that we ship, which allows you to build any of these things in Azure, really any application, we ship some C# builder classes as well. You can work strictly with JSON, or you can use a tool like this if you want to dynamically generate those JSON templates. This happens to actually represent the web form template. So using this Fluent syntax with IntelliSense, we can lay this all out programmatically. I'm going to go ahead and just visualize that for you so you can see the different parts of the template itself. You see we have those parameters again, and you can make them as simple or as complex as you want in here. I have network settings in Azure, my affinity groups. You see storage accounts and cloud services. And over here is where I've laid out my servers within Azure. Then if we look down at this configuration, we have something called install web farm. And then you can kind of see we're using, if you're familiar with DSC, those resources. This looks like a lot like a JSON translation of DSC resources because it is. Right? We support all of the out-of-box features, including any custom ones that you want to ship as part of your configuration. And these are really just simple name value pairs in here that you can look at and build for each one of your machines. Now we tie those configurations together using a concept called config sets. So we have a web farm server and it uses that install web farm configuration. And then at the machine level, we tie those two things together by saying, well, this machine's going to, both of these machines are going to be a web form server, but one of them is going to be a web publish server. So runtime, we inspect the environment, we take a union of all these different DSC resources, we compose, dynamically generate that DSC file, push it down to that machine. To show you that, I'm actually going to go out to a machine that I have running in Azure, and you can do this if you, this is deployed earlier, so I have this deployed through Brewmaster, and you go look out on the disk in the program data, you'll see Brewmaster's config, and you will see a file out here called master configuration. If I open that up, it looks amazingly just like DSC because it is. Now, we do all a little bit of syntactic sugar in here. You see we import that custom module. You know, I put in the install ASP.NET Windows feature. We put a little syntactic sugar in here like this logging and things like that, just so you can get some status as things go along during the deployment. But otherwise, this is just vanilla DSC. You can pick this up off the box, take it to any other machine, run it, and it'll work exactly as you would imagine on any other machine. The great thing that we have here. So I'm going to wrap up and say, with DSC, we've really leveraged the power of how we can have a declarative template that expresses our intent. Brewmaster is all about our intent. We have a template that says, I want my environment in Azure to look like this. And we have DSC that says, I want my machines to look like this. And together, we've expressed that, but we kind of leave it up to the back-end services to make it so. And as I said, Mark is still coming on, so hang around. We got some more great demos. I'm going to turn back to, Mike is coming on. Turn back to Mark. Thanks.
Thanks, Ryan. All right, so how many of you have environments that are completely and totally Windows and have no other operating systems in there? Only a couple of them. Okay. That is probably pretty typical. So we have a solution for you there. We have DSC on Linux. So this allows you to actually, when you have heterogeneous environments, you can actually use the configuration that I showed you in PowerShell to actually generate configurations for both Windows and Linux. It makes use of the standards that we already talked about. They have their own resources, so you can actually download and use the Linux version of DSC. It's built on top of OMI. To write the resources, you write them in Python, but it behaves the same way. You get a MOF document, send it down to a Linux box. The DSC engine receives it. It does the configuration using those Python resources. So you can download the source. It's in preview right now, and they're coming up in a few months, I think, on a full release that has more resources and some other things as well. So, and with that, I will hand it off to Mike here from ScriptRock to talk to you about Guardrail.
Hey, thanks. Hey, that looks fancy. Thanks. Yeah. Hi, g'day. I'm Mike. I'm Australian. I work for this company. I actually founded it with a few other people. And we had a really big problem about 5 years ago, predominantly that we had a fairly large environment. We were trying to automate as much of it as possible. But the reality was is that because it was so disparate and so broken, it was very, very difficult to be able to understand at any point how any of the machines were configured. And more importantly, it was really, really hard to find out who was accountable for what component at whatever stage of the life cycle. So we kind of came up with this theory, and it was during a really large Chef deployment. I don't know if anyone's familiar with Chef, but there's some Chef guys here. They're really happy. We were doing a whole heap of automation work, and we kind of realized towards the end of it that we'd done something fundamentally wrong. And that is that we'd kind of manually gone through, spoke to a lot of people about how the environments were constructed, and unfortunately everyone had really, really different opinions for it. We codified that as infrastructure as code using Chef, which was really great back then. And unfortunately, we delivered this project successfully, but unfortunately, when it came down to it afterwards, a lot of people couldn't write Chef code, and it was just, you know, for those guys, it was a really difficult thing for them to be able to understand. No disparaging to Chef, Chef's awesome. But the reality was, at that point, we kind of realized that there was something else that was really needed, and that was, for legacy or brownfield environments, you really needed to understand the current state as it was. You needed to build assertions or tests to validate any automations going forward. And more importantly, if you could abstract away the need to actually write any of the DSL or for, you know, Chef, Puppet, or any of these other languages at the time, that'd be a really good outcome. If I kind of fast forward to where we are now, we launched the product, we launched the company, and recently we actually added DSC support, which has been a really great thing for us. So I'll just jump straight into a demo. I know it's the end of the day and you probably won't have a beer. I know I do. So we'll kind of move on from there. Do I have to change something or one of these buttons? Awesome. So this is Guardrail. Guardrail is a web application that you can use online in a tenanted fashion, or you can even pull the whole thing behind the firewalls of virtual appliance. The principle behind it is, as I said before, to find out what you've got, create assertions to validate, you know, the things that you care about, and ultimately convert those into automations. So this is like a typical environment, if you like, Arrested Development, if you've seen it. This is the Bluth company. Their account's constructed in a couple of different ways. They're like most large-scale organizations. They've got a combination of Unix services. They've got Wintel. They've also got web services, too. They're using Cloudflare for a couple of their other services. They've got Salesforce. These are all things that have configurations that you need to manage and monitor and ultimately version control. From our perspective, you need one interface to basically be able to consume all of those and store them in one place. So this is Guardrail. Now, by default, I'll just jump into a Windows demo. If you kind of imagine that I've started here today at the Bluth company, I've got no understanding about how any of these servers have been configured. All I know is that they're configured with, they're connected to Guardrail, and I can basically use the UI to go and discover and browse resources. So if I just jump down to this guy here, like, you know, apparently there's a problem with one of the IIS web servers in this case. So I'm just, oh, wait a second. The, just took a little bit. That's LastPass. If you need password storage, it's awesome. So this is a visual representation of a server. It's really, really different for a couple of reasons. Number one, we spent a long time thinking about this and talking with people, and a circular representation of a server and all of its configurations is the best way to get a representative state that you can difference at any point in time. I'll explain that in a second, what that really means. If you look at the rings around it, though, you can see stuff that's pretty common, right? You can see like hot fixes that have been deployed or installed. You can see any of the hardware inventory that's been deployed. You can get similar information with OHI or other products like that. You've got the Windows features that are kind of defined. You've got the usual stuff like ports, all of those types of things. So you can kind of see at a really, really high level, like a 30,000 foot view of the state of the machine. Now, the really cool thing is if you don't like that type of view, you can jump into a table view. Everything that I'm showing you now is actually API-driven. It's RESTful, so you can talk to it and interrogate it. But the super cool thing is that because Guardrail is on these machines and it's constantly interrogating the machine and pulling the state back, it basically means that you can do a couple of things. One is you can compare this machine to itself at any point in time. Two, you can compare this machine to other nodes or groups of nodes. So if you've got one machine that's similar and you want to compare it to it, you can do that. If you've got 100 machines or even 1,000 machines, you can do that in one place. For the purposes of this, though, I'll just jump down and compare it to this machine. Now, what it's done is it's gone down, it's kind of done a crunch, and it's come back and said, hey, look, I can see between these two machines there's like a percentage difference between the configuration state. Now, when we talk about state, we're not talking about CPU process or anything like that. We're talking about the configurable items on the machine. So in this case, like hot fixes, there's a difference between the hot fixes. Sorry, just the color coding there. Green means it's on one machine, the primary machine. Red means it's on the secondary machine. So if there's something that's orange, it means it's on both machines, but it's fundamentally different in some way. It's been modified typically. So in this case, you can kind of see that, there's hot fixes on one machine that should be on another machine. You can kind of see that the hardware is different between the machines too. One's running an Intel Proc, one's running an AMD. You can see registry differences here. So it's gone down, pulled the registry, said, hey, look, there's a whole heap of differences here. But more importantly, if you kind of look at environment variables, you can see that there's stuff that, that is typically going to be different. The really cool thing about Guardrail is that we've built it so that you can actually remove a lot of that noise. So you can just right-click at any point in time and add it to ignore list and it just won't appear. The really cool thing about it, though, is that we've kind of got that view. You've kind of seen roughly what's different, what's changed. You can drill in and drill out. But the really cool thing is that you can go to really granular levels, right? So you can drill right into the state of a file and do a line-by-line comparison with them. So if you've ever seen Tripwire or looked at a FIM service or anything like that, whilst they're really expensive, they don't need to be. This type of technology is available now, and you can use it with products like Guardrail, which is cool. All right, so that kind of highlights like how easy it is to use this product and kind of get an understanding of the state of it, kind of drill in, learn a little bit about the service or the server, and then pull back. The really cool thing about this, and I don't know if I mentioned it, we support servers, network devices, firewalls, web services, SAN devices, everything except for mainframe. So if you're still using VTAM, Netmaster, OCS, or anything like that, we don't support that, but maybe one day. But really quickly, if I kind of get to the point of it all, though, the really cool thing is that you can actually take a configuration state that you've discovered, curate it down, and then basically choose the components that you want, that you think are relevant to a service, and you can actually create a set of policies. Now, policies is basically what we call pre-flight checks. They're basically tests. So if you use something like Service Spec or Pester or something like that, we dynamically generate those for you, so you don't have to learn any of the weirdo syntaxes that may prevail. So in this case, I'll choose something like web. I just did a pretty straightforward context search there. I can go around and I can actually, in this case, I'll just build a policy, so I'll call it web baseline 343. I'll just create it. So what I'm doing now is I'm basically taking that state, pulling it up, putting it in one fluid version-controlled location within the app, and basically now I'm just going to click and choose the things that I care about. So in this case, I could go here, I could choose a whole heap of attributes, but I'm not really into that because we all want to have a beer. So what I'll do instead is I'll just add this whole set of data to this configuration policy. Now, that's kind of happened in the background, but I'll just point out a couple of other things that are probably worthwhile. It's version controlled. You can variabilize any parameter that you need within a configuration. And on top of that, you can invite multiple users into this view too. So if you've got a guy that's in security team and a guy that's in the web team or a guy that does storage, you can actually get them all to integrate and kind of choose the things that are relevant. The other thing that I'll show you too really quickly from a top level is that whilst you can see here, I've kind of just, defined a basically written state of a machine with all of these roles, all of the content around them, all of the metadata associated with them dynamically, that file, all of the content associated with them too. Because it's in this one place, I can execute it and send it down to machines en masse. So, but before I do that, I'll just add a quick check because I forgot about this. I've got to make sure that we've got network connectivity for this particular machine. So I'll just add a custom script. And in this case, I can choose templates. Really, really similar to the way that DSC resources work. We actually provide preformatted templates for the majority of actions that you would probably perform on a machine day to day. So in this case, I won't go through them all, but there's like hundreds of them. I'll just choose a network connectivity template. I'll do something like, Google, for example. I did this earlier today a couple of times. You've got background information you can fill out for, if you want to be polite to people that come after you. And from my perspective now, I've got that test there. I haven't had to learn any type of spec tests or anything like that. I've just written it in human language, and I can execute it now. So I'll execute the whole, this whole configuration document, basically. Watch this. On the same machine. I won't do it on the second machine because that would probably suck. But what it's doing now, it's basically going out to Azure. This is an Azure box, by the way. It's basically going, hey, are you configured in this state, yes or no? And it's basically going through those tests one at a time. Now, the really cool thing about Guardrails, you can hook it into a configuration management tool like TeamCity, Jenkins, or anything like that. So it kind of gives you the ability to be able to validate an environment beforehand and after a release, for example. Now, but the other cool thing, and the real reason that we're here, thanks, Mark, is that we can do a couple of other things. That's running in the background. It'll send an alert or generate a PDF and email me if I want that too. What I really want to do now, though, is now that I know that this state is good, I kind of want to take this and I want to basically turn it into an automation. Out of the box, we do that in a couple of different ways. Number one, you can take this. If this was a Linux machine, I could create a Docker manifest. If this was a Puppet machine, it is actually, I can create a Puppet manifest dynamically on the fly. I can do the same for Chef too, because they're here. There you go. Hey guys. But more importantly, I can do it for DSC too. So in one place, all the resources that you need are there. There are some tweaks and changes that you'll have to make through the file, and you probably want to add it to another repo and probably package it in some way. But ultimately, you've gone from not having a clue what you've got, curating it down to something you care about, and then ultimately converting that into something that you can use in... How long has the demo taken? About 4 minutes, maybe 8 minutes. So that's kind of Guardrail, and that's kind of how the product works. I'd love to talk with all of you and tell you more about it, but if you want to learn more, just come up. We've got a booth today, so you can come and visit. So I'll let you have a beer. Thanks, guys.
All right.